Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Friday, October the 15th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat.
If you are just joining us, the breaking news this afternoon is the death, the murder of Sir David Amess, Conservative Party MP, who was going about his daily business, seeing his constituents at his weekly surgery when he was stabbed multiple times. He was attended to by an air ambulance on the scene, but he has lost his life, as has been confirmed by Essex Police just a short while ago.
Sir David Amess remembered. A horrifying end to his life. But what I'm going to be playing for you are some of the tributes to him and to his life. On a very sad day in politics in the United Kingdom, a look at Sir David Amess and what his life was about. Coming up next.
And what they will find, I suspect, so hard is that he appears to have been killed doing the bit of the job that he thought was so important, serving constituents and meeting them in his constituency surgery. The responses have started coming in since that news. One unusual person to have responded so soon is the Prime Minister's wife, Carrie Johnson. She has tweeted absolutely devastating news about Sir David Amess. He was hugely kind and good, an enormous animal lover and a true gent. This is so completely unjust. Thoughts are with his wife and their children.
Dear listener, I sit here in disbelief on this Friday, and I hope you are well and that you are finding your way through this Friday. Thank you very much for your listening ear as we get to the end of another conventional work week. Those of you who will be working over the weekend and your week of work continues, or work never ends, depending on who you are and where you are in the world. And thank you for being here and sparing some time with everything that you have on your plate. I hope that you're able to lighten thy load beginning today and that you have a great weekend ahead of you. Well, it's not going to be a very good weekend for a lot of people in the world who lose loved ones to knife violence or gun violence or any kind of violence. And it certainly will not be a good or pleasant weekend for the family of Sir David Amess, a UK Member of Parliament who today was murdered in his own surgery in Lee-on-Sea in Southend. And this is one of the most horrific acts of violence against an MP, Member of Parliament, in the UK since it last happened 5 years ago, with Joe Cox, who was the MP for Batley and Spen in West Yorkshire in England. And I just could not compute in my brain that it happened again. Today, at just after 12 noon in England, in Lee-on-Sea, at a Methodist church, at a church, no less, Sir David Amess, who was a Conservative Member of Parliament, was stabbed repeatedly, and he died at the scene as he was literally trying to dispense advice and service to the constituents that he served for almost 40 years of his life. Sir David was only 69 years of age, and that is a young age, and there was so much more ahead. He was a tireless campaigner, as you will hear in a number of clips, and he was well respected and well liked. A 25-year-old man has been arrested for this heinous murder, this heinous act of violence, and a cowardly act of violence. Now, Sir David Amess is somebody who leaves behind a family who will never have his presence in their lives again. His spouse and his 5 children will have this huge void in their lives for the rest of their days. And I want to, at this moment, send my deepest and most heartfelt condolences to the spouse of Sir David Amess and to the 5 children of Sir David Amess, especially now at these very extremely distressing times for them. When a loved one is taken from you in any circumstance, it is painful, heartbreaking, and there is a deep hole in your heart and soul that doesn't ever really close. And when a loved one is taken through gun violence or knife violence or any other kind of violence that doesn't relate to health in terms of the person's own health, it is even more painful. Sir David had advertised his hours of surgery, in fact, hours. And for those of you who do not know what a surgery is, it's not literal medical surgery, as in a surgery on your leg or ankle or some other kind of surgery. It's not that. It is surgery as in appointment hours at an office. And in England, for those of you who don't know, and across the United Kingdom, particularly in England, there are the surgery hours. These are hours where constituents, those persons who are in a district that that particular politician serves, or any particular politician serves, are invited to come in during office hours, or what are called surgery hours. And the word surgery is spelt the same way as it is in medicine. To come in and speak to their member of parliament, who represents them, about the issues of the day that they would like to see the MP they are speaking to do something about. Sometimes these appointments and visits may just be something personal that the constituent wants to tell the MP. It could be something to do with their health. It could be something to do with the environment. It could be something to do with some dispute that might be personal or private, that they would like to have the Member of Parliament's advice on. They may need to have some referrals. Perhaps the Member of Parliament can refer them to some services or some areas. Or perhaps the Member of Parliament themselves may say, I'm going to get on top of this and do what I can. Sir David Amess belonged to the latter of that. He was very active. And you will hear this in some of the tributes. Very active. And he was performing these kinds of services, listening to constituents, performing these services. And on Twitter, a few days before, he had been very specific about his surgery. He was very open in that way. He was a caring person for people. He cared about life. He was indeed a pro-lifer, actually, an anti-abortionist. A fervent one. He was also somebody who believed in animal welfare and animal rights and animal safety, and he campaigned vigorously on those issues. He was also pro-death penalty, and he was also a Brexiteer. Things that, of course, I disagree with personally. I don't agree with Brexiteers. I don't agree with people who are anti-abortion, and I definitely don't agree with people who are pro-death penalty. And I can say that Sir David Amess was all of those things. Pro-death penalty, anti-abortion, and also somebody who was somebody who believed fervently in Brexit. But that does not mean that Sir David Amess should be taken off the planet. That is absolutely irrational and cruel and evil and antisocial at the very least. And Sir David Amess also was a Thatcherite. He was out of the school of Margaret Thatcher. I couldn't agree any less with someone like Sir David Amess. But again, we are human beings, and we need to have a respectful way of dealing with each other. And that's something I want to get into a little bit later on. And please excuse the ambient noise. That sounds like a wolf or a coyote howling in the background. So we do get those around here in this part of the world, in San Francisco, California. And I just want you to be patient with me. If you can hear that sound in the background, or if you've been able to hear it during the last few moments, please bear with me. These things are part of life here in San Francisco. But I just wanted to let you know, dear listener, that this is what Sir David Amess was doing. He was trying to help people. And the thing is that Sir David Amess really did care about people. And he cared about what he believed in. He always stood up for his constituents. He always was someone who wanted to become not a big, big star on the political stage. He wanted to become a person who changed things inside the House of Commons in Westminster. He really wanted to change that system and how things got done. Even though he was all of those things I mentioned earlier and what he believed in, he wanted to make some changes in the system to try to make it work better for people, and particularly for his constituents. Sir David Amess is going to be sorely missed. This is a horrible, horrible act of violence. And Sir David Amess is getting tributes throughout the land, across England and beyond. Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, all the other parts of the United Kingdom paying tribute to Sir David Amess, who had been a politician for almost 40 years. He campaigned to get Southend-on-Sea to become a city, and I'm sure that that will continue as well. He believed in Southend. Southend is, I don't know, 50 miles east of London, maybe a bit further than that. I have not checked Southend, but it's to the east. It's a quieter community in some ways. It depends on what part of Southend, I suppose. But Southend-on-Sea is where Sir David Amess served his constituents. He was someone who really cared about the people he served. And I will take a break, and what you're going to be hearing are the kinds of things you've been hearing so far, the audio I've played for you. Sam Coates of Sky News, the first piece of audio that you heard, and other Sky News presenters. Sam Coates, one of the deputy political editor. He is the deputy political editor at Sky News. You heard him. That was the first voice you heard, and other Sky News people weighing in. But you're going to hear more audio, and you're going to be hearing from the people who really knew Sir David Amess. This is someone who was respected by politicians from across every persuasion. He was someone who really did treat people with respect, regardless of whether you agreed with his views or whether he agreed with their views. And we need to return to an era where we treat each other with respect. That includes me. You know, I've got to stop calling people names. I know I do it on this podcast. You've heard me a million times with it. I have to stop doing that. I mean, I do not think that that helps. And it does not reflect very well on me as a person, quite frankly. We do respond to things sometimes, but look, I think that if I sit here talking about people wanting to change the world, you have to start with yourself. That, of course, I've always said this, that it also includes me, the person talking to you, dear listener. And I've got to do that too. That I am never exempt from any of the things I am talking about. Never, ever, ever. And we all have to do this, and that includes me. So I do want to take a break right now. And what you're going to be hearing are some tributes to Sir David Amos coming from the people who really knew him. And that's coming up right after this.
Coates said, across a political divide, all colleagues will be totally shocked by this, because Sir David was one of those colleagues who was unassuming, who was fun, who worked hard for his constituents and never had a bad word to say about anybody. He was always friendly to everybody and it didn't matter who they were. And we've lost a fantastic colleague.
Up with everybody I'm speaking to is that he was decent and kind.
Yes, and of course what we have to remember is he has a family who will be totally devastated now by what's happened to him, and no member of parliament that should this happen to, but it certainly shouldn't happen to their family too.
That was Conservative MP Pauline Latham from Mid Derbyshire on the Sky News broadcast earlier today, paying tribute and respects to Sir David Amos, who was brutally murdered earlier today during surgery hours. And he is literally talking to constituents. And someone came up to him, a 25-year-old man who has been arrested for this, and stabbed Sir David Amos multiple times. And this is just so horrible. Horrible. And he died at the scene. It's horrible. This is inside a church on top of everything else. And unspeakable. Just really horrible. And again, I send my condolences to the family of Sir David Amos. This is so horrible. And also to the people who knew him best beyond his family. And you heard the MP there, Pauline Latham, talk about how kind he was. And you don't get that in politics these days. There are a lot of people who are just very nasty. You know, they come across on television and they seem like they're decent. And then you hear these stories about them behind the scenes. And they don't interact with people, or they're buried, their heads are buried in their phones, or they're quite rude and just, you know, nasty people. And I get it, in politics you get that. But you can be a decent person. I know people laugh at that. You can be a decent person in politics and still be aggressive about the causes that you believe in without having to be a complete dick. There I go with the name calling. I didn't call anybody a particular... I didn't call anyone specific the name. So I forgive myself that. Sir David Amos was a gentleman, as you've been hearing, and you're going to hear more about Sir David. Ah, boy, this is really horrible, man. I mean, again, as I said, I didn't agree with his views, but that's not the point, what I agreed with or disagreed with. The point is that this is about our humanity and what kind of people we are and what kind of culture we live in and what kind of society we are living in. I'm going to play a couple more tributes, and I want to then address a couple of things about the society, because I know people do say, well, it's too soon to talk about this and that. And I kind of agree with that to a great degree, but I also think, is it too soon? Why isn't the time right now to be talking about some things that I think absolutely must be talked about? I'll be back in a moment, and I will be playing you a couple more clips about Sir David Amess as he was remembered by those who knew him best, his colleagues. And it's a very sad day. It's a very sad day in England. It's a very sad day for politics in England and in the United Kingdom overall. And it's a very sad day, obviously, most of all, to say the very least, for the family of Sir David Amess.
Into the House of Commons on the same day in 1983. I've known him and loved him as a Member of Parliament, as a colleague, ever since. He was a devout and devoted man. He was the kindest of people. He spent his entire life, dedicated his life, trying to work for people and animals, which was another of his great causes. And his loss is absolutely tremendous, first and foremost for his family, who he always put first, and then for the House of Commons, to which he made a tremendous contribution. He was funny, he was fun, he was dedicated and determined, but unlike some of us who maybe take things too seriously sometimes, David was never too serious, but always serious at the right time. And that's probably why he was such an effective Member of Parliament. And his work will go on. Particularly his work for animals will go on. And those of us who share that interest will make sure that it does. David put Basildon first, of course, because that was his first constituency, and then Southend, above everything else. He was incredibly courageous. He was like a terrier. If he got his teeth into an issue on behalf of a constituent, he wouldn't let go. And that's how it should be. And I think the manner in which he conducted his constituency advice surgeries and the fact that he was there, available, ready to meet people, to listen to them, to look after them, to do what he could to help them when they were in their own distress and trouble, speaks all the volumes that need to be said. He died terribly, terribly sadly, doing what he did best, helping people.
That was Conservative MP Sir Roger Gale of North Thanet in Kent, in England, with his heartfelt tribute to his colleague, his longtime colleague, Sir David Amess, who was brutally murdered earlier today. It's just so unspeakable, the violence that pervades our society. And Sir Roger Gale there talking lovingly and affectionately about his colleague, Sir David Amess. And you could really hear in that tribute just how much Sir David meant to Sir Roger Gale. And I assure you that Sir David Amess meant a whole lot to a lot of people, including those who had differing political views from he. There have been tributes from all across the political corners and quarters in the House of Commons and across the United Kingdom. People who are Liberal Democrats, people who are in the Labour Party, people who are in any party across the United Kingdom, and also including up in Scotland, where the First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, of the Scottish National Party, gave her tributes as well. This has just been a really horrible day in politics in the United Kingdom, and particularly in England, but especially this has been a horrible day for the family of Sir David Amess, who was brutally murdered earlier today. It's just a horrible, horrible thing. And this is 5+ years after the murder of Joe Cox, the MP out of West Yorkshire for Batley and Spen. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the things that are going on, or that I just want to opine on them, if you don't mind. But that's not before another tribute or two, if you will. So please, I think more importantly, we've got to take a moment here, or I have to take a moment here, to provide to you, dear listener, some more of these tributes so that you really do understand the kind of person that Sir David Amess was. And again, this is beyond the views that I disagree with about. You know, again, I am not someone who believes in the death penalty. Sir David Amess wanted to bring that back to the UK, to England. He wanted to, you know, he was someone who believed, you know, he was an anti-abortionist. He believed in pro-life, and you know, that's the view he had on that. And he was a Brexiteer, and he was very much of the Margaret Thatcher era. He was a Thatcherite. And we know that Margaret Thatcher did some devastatingly awful things to the United Kingdom, as is this current Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, who I think is even worse. I know I'm talking politics, and that's rather unseemly in these hours, just after something so horrible. But I'm doing it with context. I mean, it probably does not excuse me, and I would say it doesn't excuse me. I'm simply trying to lay out here. Well, I'm not even going to say anything more than that. Sir David Amess is going to be sorely missed, and you can hear that in these tributes. And I'm going to now play you one or two more.
Pouring for Sir David speaks so many volumes about what a character he was, what sort of man he was, what sort of MP he was, and a colleague and a friend to so many people around here in Westminster. And I have got so many tributes that I could read out. Let me give you a few. Theresa May said she was heartbroken. She described Sir David as a decent man, a respected parliamentarian. She described it as a tragic day for our democracy. Sir John Major said it was heartbreaking news. He described Sir David as a good and decent man. Tony Blair, who came into Parliament with Sir David in 1983, said that he always found him a courteous, decent and thoroughly likeable colleague who was respected across the House. David Davis described him as kind and decent. I can go on and on and on. But let's have a listen to what Sir Lindsay Hall, the Speaker of the House, had to say about Sir David Amess to us earlier today.
David's life will not be lost in vain, that we will do the right thing by him. What we've got to do is think about him and his family and his staff at this moment. And what we've got to do on Monday is go to the House and let's discuss the life of Sir David.
Polite and charming and loved by both sides of the House.
Jonathan, you've encapsulated it beautifully, and I think that's a very pithy summary of some of David Amess's parliamentary qualities. He did indeed contribute regularly. He was a prolific speaker. He always spoke very clearly and forcefully, with real passion and principle invested in every word. As you rightly surmise, he was also incredibly courteous to and respectful of colleagues' right to participate, and therefore he wasn't selfish about it. He would ensure always that there was plenty of time for other people. But also, it's important to emphasise, he was very tolerant of other views than his own. He had deep-rooted convictions, but he didn't hold disagreement against someone. So he would play the ball rather than the man or the woman. If more people did that, politics would be the better for it. He was, I must say to you, Jonathan, really a quite remarkable constituency member of Parliament, as so many of the tributes today have eloquently testified. He was conscientious, he was assiduous, he was dutiful, he was caring, he was passionate, he was principled, he was indefatigable, he was a great campaigner, he was an outstanding House of Commons person. I knew him for over 30 years, including some years before I arrived in the House. I knew him throughout my time in the House, and I can, having served as Speaker for over a decade, say with some authority, because I witnessed him from my vantage point in the chair, that that man never spoke a word that he didn't believe. That was a mark of him.
So those were the voices in order of Beth Rigby, the political editor at Sky News. Then you heard from the current Speaker of the House of Commons, Sir Lindsay Hoyle. Then you heard from Sky News anchor and correspondent on location at Lee-on-Sea, I believe it's called, or South End, definitely in South End, at Lee, in Lee, in South End, of Jonathan Samuels, excuse me. And then you heard from the former Speaker of the House of Commons, John Bercow, who I think very, as in his usual eloquent way, in his usually eloquent way, gave a very good tribute again, as everyone has, to Sir David Amos. Really thought that, aside from Sir Roger Gale, that the former Speaker of the House, John Bercow, outlined and underlined exactly the kind of person that Sir David Amos was. So when I return, there is going to be a different type of conversation, but not at all unrelated to all of this, is that in the wake of what has happened here today, in a very horrific attack and brutal, heinous act of violence against someone who is trying to serve the people, who spent his life, 40 years of his life, almost, serving the people. You know, in the wake of all of that, what do we do? And how do we respond to this? The calls for increased security are understandable. That is the expected thing that you will hear from people. It's obvious that I think members of parliament, all kinds of people in public life, in political life, need to have layers of protection. There's no question about it. What we saw earlier this year, and I'll get into this after the break, but is there anything more than that that we need to do? That is coming up right after this. Welcome back. Dear listener, thank you again for your listening here on this Friday. And it's a very sad day. At least I feel sad. I'll speak for myself. I feel very sad about what happened here. Happened across the Atlantic, if you will, across the pond, as they say. I feel very sad about this, about the taking of life. And it doesn't matter if it is someone who's in a high position of power or someone who has a degree of power as a politician, or whether it's someone down the street from here or down the street in any city or town anywhere on the planet. A life lost is a life lost, and that is a painful thing for the planet, quite frankly, and because the potential of that person has gone. You know, what that person can contribute has gone, no matter what age they are in their lives, when their lives come to some horrific end like this. You know, all the knife crime that happens in England, in particular in London and in Birmingham and in Manchester and other cities, and there are countless numbers of lives lost, black lives in particular. And, you know, it's just so paining to me, because all of the potential that we have as people and as a society gets absolutely shut down with these senseless acts of violence. But they do not happen in a vacuum. And so that's really what I want to get into. You just heard the voice of Pauline Latham. She is the MP, Conservative MP out of Mid Derbyshire, representing constituents there. And she was on with Sky News earlier today and talked a bit about the security element of things. And I'm sure that when the House of Commons comes back on Monday, they will indeed be talking about this. And I think there was some audio I played earlier from Sir Lindsay Hoyle that I think may have alluded to that. But if not, that is what is going to happen coming up next week. There's going to be a conversation about security and about remembering Sir David Amos, who actually began in politics at the age of 16 years old. It is never too early to get into politics, and it is never too late to either. And that's why we have to stay active. I do this podcast on a daily basis, and it's not the only thing I do, obviously, but Well, obviously, to me, it's not the only thing that I do. Far from it. But we have to get active. We have to. And Sir David Amess got into politics at the age of 16. 16. It's never too early to get involved in politics. It's never too early to organize, to strategize, to put your issues front and center and fight for them. And fight for them in the way that Sir David Amess did. With passion, with undying fervor, tenacity, but also decency, which is what Sir David Amess had. Decency. Something I treasure that. Decency. Now, of course, we'll get into the name calling here and there, which is not decent. I will. I'm not going to say we. I'm talking about me. I've done it a billion times here. I've done it on social media. And I really have got to recalibrate what I do with that because, you know, it's not good. It ain't good to be calling. It's rather juvenile. So, you know, it's not to say that I'm going to completely stop, but I am going to definitely do it a bit less often or try to get rid of it completely eventually. Because, again, if you want to change the world that you live in, you first got to start with changing yourself because you can't divorce yourself from that. You are part of the world as an individual and you want to make positive contributions to the world. And I don't think you can adequately, properly, sincerely do that without also trying to change the things in yourself that you know you need to change, that need to be improved. You know, I think it's important. I mean, some people go, oh, you're too serious about this. Oh, my gosh, enjoy your life. Well, I do. I enjoy my life. I completely enjoy my life. You know, but that doesn't mean that I don't have a responsibility to be better in areas where I have to be better. None of us are the finished article. And of course, there's no such thing as perfection. There may be perfectionists, but there's no such thing as perfection. And why would you want perfection? At that point, you never learn anything. You are allowed to make mistakes, but you must be allowed and you must learn from the mistakes you make so that you do not repeat them. But I do want to get back more to Sir David Amess. This was a decent human being. And again, I have definitely disagreements with his political views, but the man carried himself with decency. And we don't have that here in the United States at all when it comes to politics. Forget about it. And look, do you want us to go back to the days of Burr and Hamilton? Aaron Burr, the Vice President of the United States, back in the 1800s? Do you want to go back to those days? Alexander Hamilton, the first Treasury Secretary of the United States of America? Do you want to go back to the days of 1804? When Burr, Aaron Burr, and Alexander Hamilton had a duel. Do you want to go back to that? And Burr shot and killed Alexander Hamilton. Is that where the politics is going back to? Is that where we're going back to? And this is the part of the conversation that people don't want to have on the same day that a politician is murdered. And I understand because I think many people will find it to be profoundly disrespectful. Leave that for another time, Omar. Leave that for another time, whomever it applies to. Do it on another day. I do feel, dear listener, enormously torn about that because you really can't separate one from the other. I just spoke about the idea that this kind of violence and knife crime and gun violence does not happen in a vacuum. It's not just people popping up here and there and just committing these heinous, cowardly, evil acts. Just because. There is a climate, there is an environment, there are also, of course, people who are doing these things, and you've got to look at what's going on in their lives. It's never a justification for the violent acts. Never, ever, ever. I'm not going to ever sit here and justify acts of violence like the ones perpetrated on a daily basis with knives or perpetrated on this basis with a knife to a politician who all he did was serve his constituents. And even if he didn't do that, no human life should be eradicated with this vicious kind of violence. It's just, it shouldn't happen. It should not be what we want in this country or any country. And we've already had assassinations this year. If you look at Haiti, I'm not going to divorce any of these things. These are all connected things. They're all in this ecosphere. The assassination of the Haitian president, Javal, I believe. Forget his exact name. Last name. That happened in July of this year. And now, 3 months later, you've got the assassination, the murder of an English politician while he is serving his constituents in a church. You had what happened here in the United States on January 6th, a terrorist attack. You have people with nooses out in front of the United States Capitol building in Washington, D.C., saying, hang the vice president, at that time Mike Pence, hang the vice president of the United States. That's what they were saying. And also do the very same to Speaker Pelosi. That's what these terrorists were saying on January 6, 2021. There is a climate on this planet of violence and violent rhetoric and all kinds of nasty things on social media. And the whole culture and the society has been like this forever. These violent things. I'm not talking even about Hollywood and Hollywood movies or anything else. I'm talking about the way we do things in the United States or anywhere else in the United Kingdom. The way we do things in the UK. The way we disregard people and throw them to the side as if they don't matter to us. And they don't matter to the Tory government. And they don't matter to the Republicans. We disregard people. We act as if they are disposable. That's an attitude. That's a mindset. That's a criminal thing. That is a crime. It in and of itself is an act of violence. When a system has such a vast inequity, vast wealth gaps, such as here in San Francisco, you have uber rich and the poorest of poor on top of each other. And when you have a system that clearly can do something about poverty, but continues to perpetuate poverty. That is an act of violence as well. When you have a healthcare system that doesn't do this job, doesn't do what it should do, and we don't have Medicare for all in the United States. So people end up dying because they've got to make these choices between keeping a roof over their head and living. That is unholy and that is violent. And a system that does that is also violent. And social media is violent in many ways. I've been saying social media, and I'm on social media at the Popcorn R-E-E-L. I dare say some of you who are listening are on social media. And I would hazard a guess that you have seen imagery on social media that is violent. You've seen videos that are violent. The climate of toxicity has just absolutely ratcheted up. And also the rhetoric in the House of Commons, particularly over the last 2 years in the run-up to Brexit. In fact, ever since 2016, when this ill-fated referendum, although it was not ill-fated, it actually succeeded, which made it ill-fated because it has now, as people were saying, some people back then, 5 years ago, has now really made the United Kingdom a far weaker country and destroyed the place. It really has. The UK has been destroyed by this Brexit. And ironically, as I said earlier, Sir David Amos was a big supporter. He was a Brexiteer. This Brexit has absolutely made things a lot worse for so many millions of people. It has cost and caused petrol shortages, oil, gas shortages. It has cost so many things. It has really cost us. And all of these things are going on, dear listener. And in the midst of all this, my question is security enough? Because I do think that members of parliament should get more security. However, I do not believe that these visits to surgery should be scrapped. They had been halted in the era of COVID, which continues. That era is very much alive. This pandemic is very much here. Just because you may feel that it's not in your part of town doesn't mean that it is not for the country that you live in or for the planet that you live on, because it certainly is not. My question again is, I agree that we need more security for any politician. You look back at January 6th here in the United States in this year, 2021, and you go, my goodness me, some of these politicians were within a few seconds of being violently attacked. The United States has had a history of political assassinations. Presidents being assassinated. I just mentioned the Treasury Secretary, the first Treasury Secretary of these United States, Alexander Hamilton, assassinated by a fellow politician back in 1804. It's the Vice President of the United States at the time, Aaron Burr. And just imagine this, right? Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States, challenges someone to a duel, right? Challenges, it would never happen, and I don't want it to happen because it never would. This is just completely imaginary. Challenges the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, to a duel. And that's what happened back in 1804. Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. Politics is, there's always been a history in the United States of violent rhetoric and violent politics and violent people in politics and a violent climate of people in the public around politics. There were assassination attempts on Gerald Ford's life at least twice. On both occasions, women threatened to kill him or tried to kill him. Gerald Ford, that is. And I think both times in San Francisco, California, by the way. This is just, the pacifist city. This happened in the 1970s. I think in both instances, there's been a violent climate in the UK. We've seen the murders, the bombings of politicians, the murders of politicians. Airy Neave back in 1979 or 78. You've had numerous assassinations as well, other murders of politicians. Joe Cox more recently in 2016. I'm going to get back to Joe Cox in a moment. Serving her constituents in a surgery just the same way as what would happen today, sadly, to Sir David Amos. You've had other politicians back in the 1970s as well in England assassinated. Or later on, near assassinations or attempts. This is something that has not just popped up today. And I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this today, given the very sad state of affairs that we are experiencing here with the loss of Sir David Amos. I'm really sad about this. I don't care that it doesn't matter that the guy is a particular party affiliation. I told you, I'm not this yay teamer who believes that everything that the party I happen to vote most often with or vote for uniformly is perfect. It's not. It ain't good. And sometimes you have to speak out when things aren't right. And you have to speak out when they are right and then push for them to be even better. That is our function. I do, dear listeners, sincerely believe that we all have that responsibility in some way, shape, or form. This is a sad day in English politics. It's a very sad day. And I do agree with the Member of Parliament for Mid-Derbyshire that there does need to be increased security. What's going on social media as well is just awful, with the violent attacks against politicians such as the MP for Mid-Derbyshire. Yeah, I just think it's just abominable what's really is. Pauline Latham, the MP for Mid-Derbyshire, it's absolutely abominable what's happening. There are other MPs who are facing so many violent attacks or violent rhetoric online, death threats. Diane Abbott, the MP out of Hackney in northeast London, gets more death threats on social media than any other politician in England, Scotland, Wales, or Northern Ireland. There's a study done that showed that she got the most abuse from any, more abuse than any other politician in the UK. And it was sexist, misogynist, and racist abuse. And it's just, this is unacceptable. So there's other things as well. There's violence, there's this culture, there are people who profit off of a culture like a Twitter, like a Facebook, who are in charge of all that, who are making money off it. And I'm not talking about tweeters who have accounts, who have monetized accounts so that they make money by the click or the retweet or the like. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the people who craft these platforms, who make these platforms, who own these platforms. I'm talking about a society that finds violence to be very acceptable. And those are the things. And the response usually is security, security. But what if security gets things wrong? What if security doesn't do its job correctly and these violent acts continue and still occur in spite of the security? Are we going to have to install metal detectors? Is that going to be the route now? Come to the surgery, but you're going to have to get wanded first. I mean, is that where we're going? Because I know about the surgeries. You just go in, you make an appointment most often. You go in and sit down and you talk to your MP face to face. That's unprecedented access. You can't do that here in the United States. It just won't happen. What you get, the nearest thing you get to that is a town hall meeting. And now, even before COVID came along, especially Republican politicians, they don't want to meet their constituents face to face, especially in recent years. But now, generally, these are all Zoom meetings or they're teleconference meetings where you will have some politicians doing this. They will be holding their meetings when they have a recess here in the United States through Zoom or through some kind of forum. I mean, I did an episode you should go listen to where Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House here in the United States, did an event with KQED Live, a radio station here in San Francisco, where she appeared in person before a live audience. And I played you some of the clips from that. I hope you got to listen to that. You can go back and listen to it, if you please, where she's talking about what's going on in Congress, what's going on in Washington, D.C. And yeah, politicians up and down the land in England, in the UK at large, and people who do have these surgery meetings, except it's very intimate, it's face-to-face. And security is needed, I agree. But how practical can it be? I mean, how far should we go with that? Does it mean metal detectors? Does it mean bodyguards? Yeah, I think bodyguards definitely should be included. And I would definitely have that happen. I would like to see that. Would it be metal detectors, though, at surgeries? Would it be having people on the rooftops of surgeries and in some districts? Is it going to be something like that? Are we going to be doing ID checks and spot checks of constituents before they come in? I mean, is that what we're getting to? It's the era of COVID. It's the pandemic. It's still very much here. And I would love to know from anyone, what, dear listener, do we do? How practical is it going to be? I think we definitely need more security for politicians. I mean, up until recently, and I think it's still true here in the United States, there is still a big protective ring around the White House. I think that's still going on. And if it's not going on, it may have only been taken away in recent weeks. You had some dozens of thousands of National Guard here through the last, through April, it was, protecting the White House, protecting the, especially the U.S. Capitol building. And, you had people killed on January 6th here in this terrorist attack. You had people killed, police officers killed. So, how much security is needed? The police didn't do anything that day. Some people were heroic. There were some Capitol Police, like Eugene Goodman, who was very heroic that day on January 6th. If he had made a wrong turn, he saved the lives of 100 senators. He led this ravenous, murderous, terroristic crowd up the wrong way. And had he decided to run toward the Senate building, or rather toward the Senate chamber, there would have been a lot of people who would have lost their lives. He took them the other way. He had a quick look over at the Senate chamber area, down the corridor down there on his right side. That's where the senators were still sitting. And he decided no. And then he went the other way and led them up the steps to follow him. And they all followed him the wrong direction and into the arms of about five or six other police. If he had made the wrong move, you would have had a lot more politicians. You would have had politicians killed. There's no way that wouldn't have happened. You had hundreds of people following this guy. You had dozens of people following him. Some of these people were armed. Some of these people had some kind of weapon on them. This would have ended horribly on January 6th. And we can never forget this terrorist attack that happened. Everyone says, remember 9/11? Remember? Of course we should. And who's going to forget what happened 20 years ago? Nobody. No one's going to forget that. But what I am concerned about is that some people might forget what happened just 9 months ago. That is what I am concerned about right now. No one's doing commemorative events now over what happened on January 6th. All I ever see on TV these days are all these corporate companies reminding us about remember 9/11, remember, like we're ever going to freaking forget. I was in New York when that happened. I'm supposed to be on a job interview that day, 20 years ago. How am I going to forget? Who's forgetting what happened? People who lost loved ones aren't going to be forgetting it. And yet every 2 minutes, well, not every 2 minutes, but, back in September, when the 20-year mark of that horrible terrorist attack happened, all I'm seeing is these corporate sponsors and things, remember 9/11? Like, what? You're making corporate statements now? This is what I can't stand. When these corporations get their grubby little hands involved in all these things that need to be dealt with seriously, and now you've got this monetary element potentially, some companies weighing in on Black Lives Matter, but not hiring black folk in their companies, not giving black folk power in those companies, meaningful power. No, but we're going to have a little add-on and tell you about Black Lives Matter. We're going to have a little add-on and tell you about 9/11. That's just the absolute cynical and empty gesture that you can expect from a lot of these companies. All of this feeds into this contempt. And I don't know who would do something so evil like this to any human being. But the answer is that somebody did. And right now, he's in custody. I don't know what's going on with it. We don't know. I've been hearing that he has this for... Well, I know this is a customary rule in the UK, that when it comes to suspects, I think it's 4 days of questioning. If it happens to be terror-related, it's, 14 days. Now, as of this particular podcast episode, no word on whether this is terrorist-related. It could well be. It may not be. I don't know. I will definitely update you, though, if there are any developments about that. But one of the things that I have noticed is that there has been very careful coverage out of Sky News in particular, because that's the only, I mean, even though they are owned by Comcast here in the United States, and they are corporate, they do, I think, a half decent job in some of these endeavors. They are far from the best. I think they are one of the better ones, and I do find myself watching Sky News more, I think, than certainly I watch that far more than any of the United States based corporation medias, because I don't watch them at all. I think they're just disgraceful. But Sky News, I think, is half decent. I think it's good, okay. It could be a lot better. I think there's some good people on there and some good correspondents there. And as of yet, the coverage, I think, has been very careful, and nothing yet on whether or not this individual who is being held, 25-year-old man, is in any way involved in any terroristic activity, or whether or not there is a terrorist act, or whether or not this is being deemed a terrorist act. Now, of course, when developments happen, one way or the other, I will definitely update you, dear listener. But this issue of security is important, and we need to examine it, and we also need to examine our attitudes as a culture and a society, because I believe that security alone is not going to prevent something like this. I know that sounds perhaps incredulous to you, dear listener, perhaps. It may sound whatever it sounds like to you, but I think you need more. There has to be a change in the culture, a change in us, in our hearts, a change in the culture, a change in the society, a change in the structures of power, a change in the mentality and the way we do things in the United Kingdom. And for that matter, anywhere across the planet where this is a real severe issue. In the United States, for sure. We have to change our approach to each other as human beings. We don't have to agree with everything that someone says. You don't have to agree with anything I say. I don't have to agree with anything that you say. But where we do have the differences of opinion and we have the disagreements, I do think it's important that we at least respect each other as human beings, even if we don't like the views that we have from each other. At least respect each other. Can we do that? Are we capable? I think it's going to be a lot deeper than security. Security, to me, while extremely important and absolutely necessary, is but a band-aid to what the real problems are, in my view. And security is a real issue, and it needs to be much stronger. However, we need to examine our hearts. And that's something that's a lot more difficult to ask people to do. Not that it's difficult to ask, it's difficult for people to undertake that journey. Because it involves a lot of soul searching. And it doesn't involve a 5-minute quick fix. This is a lifetime thing. And the question is, are we up to that as human beings? Are we up to a lifetime of examination and re-examination of our own hearts and souls? Are we up to that? Are we capable of that? Do we want to do that? Do we have the willingness to do that? Those are the deeper questions, the deeper issues that we have to explore and raise. And that is much harder than the reflexive security needed. That's the easy part. Just like a couple of weeks ago when everyone and their auntie was calling for the resignation of Metropolitan Police Commissioner Cressida Dick. And I was telling you at the time, dear listener, I don't think that the issues that beset the Metropolitan Police are going to be solved with the exit of Cressida Dick. Dame Cressida Dick should not resign. That was my position then, and it's still my position. Now, where are those calls for her exit now? You don't hear them anymore. And even before this horrible day occurred, you didn't hear those cries. Were very quiet. They were very, very faint. Because I think some of this does become grandstanding and performance. Not everybody. I don't believe that Harriet Harman, who I think someone who has a lot of integrity, Harriet Harman, the mother of the House of Commons, that's what she's called. That's what someone who has a certain level of seniority and position is called. You have the mother of the House and the father of the House. And that those are titles that are polite, respectful titles for people who have served a long time in the House of Commons, who are the longest, typically the longest serving members of the House of Commons, because they get that title. It's a title of respect and affection for people. Before he left the House of Commons a couple of years ago, Sir Kenneth Clark, had that title. He was known as the father of the House. And he's well respected, Ken Clark, you know, has been around politics for a long time. And he's no longer in the House of Commons. He was called the father of the House of Commons when he was there, because he had been in a position of seniority. And he is around for quite some time in politics. And he's still with us, thankfully. Even though I don't agree with a lot of his views either, he is more of an old-fashioned traditional conservative. I think he may have been out of the Thatcher mold as well, to a degree. But Kenneth Clark had that title, and Harriet Harman has that title presently, the mother of the House. And she called for Cressida Dick to resign. And like I said back then, it's very easy to do that. It's easy for us to do the easy thing, or even call for the easy thing, right? It's easy, yeah, get rid of him, fire him, get rid of her, fire her. Get rid of them, fire them. I understand. Yeah, I've done it too. I've said it too. But what is much harder for us, dear listener, is for us to challenge ourselves. What is much harder is for us to deeply examine the society that perpetuates violence, a society that perpetuates misogyny and violence against women, and male violence particularly against women, and demonizes and criminalizes black people. Those are the things, and brown people, those are the things that we need to get to the bottom of and eradicate. And we all need to do it in our everyday lives. In what we do, what we say, what we watch, what we believe in, that takes a lot more time, doesn't it? That takes some real deep soul searching. And there are people who've done it, though. There are people who've totally done it. People who began as stone-cold racists and then really did some soul-searching and over years and years became anti-racists. It can happen. It's not a surprising thing. People do this. Some people who are committed to doing it, do it. If you're committed, that's what it's about too. Yes, the security needs to be increased. But what about the capacity for love in our hearts and our souls? What about that? And changing a culture that perpetuates violence, that is violent. A culture where you've got MPs in the Conservative Party, like Boris Johnson and others, Mark Field, who since has left politics, who puts his hand around the back of the neck of a woman. Or Boris Johnson, who commits a violent act against his then fiance, whom, as you heard at the very, very beginning of this podcast episode, was talking about how unjust and how awful it was that Sir David Amess was murdered. She was the one whose now husband was slapping her upside down in her flat 3 years ago, 2018 or 2019, maybe 2 years ago. And the neighbors had to call the police, because there was all kinds of commotion and ruckus going on. And you hear screams of, get off me, get off me. That's the kind of thing we've got to be dealing with. Because there ain't no security for that. When you've got someone at the time running for the leadership of the Conservative Party in 2019. And you got someone like that. That was Boris Johnson, right? Who is beating up on his fiance, Carrie Simmons at the time, now Carrie Johnson, they're married. Where's the security for that, right? There ain't any. And that's my point. And that's why we got to work damn hard to change our ways, the way we relate to each other, the way we think about each other, the way we express our feelings to each other. We've got to change. And we've got to be better to each other and to people that we don't know. And this violence, we have to eradicate this. It's too much. All over the world, people have suffered immensely because of it. Lost loved ones, lost people they know or don't know. It's got to end, this violence. But our journeys in our hearts to change ourselves and change the way we feel when we don't like someone or when we don't agree with someone, that's got to be part of this journey too. There's as much security in trying to change that. That's ultimate security. Then there is sticking a few extra police officers on the beat in front of a surgery. We cannot stay with this analysis on the surface. Security is important, yeah. I'm absolutely all for it. Members of parliament, politicians all across the world need better security. There's no question about it. Journalists, I think, need better security, quite frankly. We all do. People, though, who are risking their lives in their jobs, particularly journalists, and especially members of parliament and MP and politicians in general, and other people that I've not even mentioned, they need extra security. There's no question we do. But we need to know that we can develop better security in our own hearts by actually engineering changes in ourselves. Each and every one of us as people. And that doesn't cost anything, really, for the most part. All it merits is commitment. And quite frankly, I bet you that Sir David Amess would agree with that sentiment. Sir David, rest in power. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.